So
okay, are we recording?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh my God, she's always tricking.
I know. Light on.
There's not a lot of consent, Victoria.
You know what's different? I'm doing it to your face.
I know.
This time, instead of a low-grade video of each other.
Because this is a very special edition of So Uncouth. We're all in the same room. This is unbelievable.
Sleepover edition.
Welcome to So Uncouth, a podcast filled with conversations you can't have in polite company. I'm Victoria Hannaford, a recovering journalist. I'm alive in the flesh with Caroline Craig.
He's on a slumber party with her friends.
And our friend, the mysterious Bunsen burner. We are in her house. We cannot say any more about the location. And as she likes to say, it's complicated.
It's extremely complicated. And any more details could land us all in a lot of hot water with giving away my identity. So let's just keep things tight, guys. Keep it tight.
Legally speaking. And we're three friends who usually live in three different cities. And you're joining our weekly catch-up after we have talked the hind leg off poor Comet here for basically 3 days straight.
Oh, I tell you what, I can't believe we're even doing this now, because this morning when I got up, I was just like,
you were yanked out, weren't you?
I cannot talk anymore. I just, how
that
can
is
I?
A lie.
And then, and then I walked into the living room thinking, oh, it's early. I'm just going to have a little moment. Who should be sitting there? Victoria Hannaford. And then the yanging began.
That's right.
It has not stopped.
I was just a bit disappointed about the sleep. I was like, why do I have to sleep so long? I just want to get it over and done with. So we can yang, 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 yang.
Now, I have been hanging on to a little bit of news that I've been desperate to tell you.
So you've had 3 days and you haven't done it until there's a microphone. I've got to hear what it is.
Okay. So in the last couple of weeks, I have obviously been trying to make amends for certain acts of intergenerational warfare. But I'm sorry to say that the psychological hit jobs keep coming.
I'm just going to do a small recap for anybody who hasn't heard. The alleged psychological hit jobs from the boomer or older generations coming towards Victoria Hannaford have included leaving a shopping trolley next to her car after asking for help to remove groceries from that shopping trolley, accusing her of having liquid speed. Listen, I can't remember any of the others, but
slide on detail, it's complicated. Well, I just want you to know that fucking shopping trolley bandit is back.
No.
I've seen her again.
She's following you.
She is hounding me. She's haunting my dreams. I saw her in a car park, a different car park.
Foodland? Was it Foodland?
No.
She's going around all the Foodlands.
She was at the beach. She was speeding away. And I want you to know that this geriatric delinquent now has a panel missing from her car.
No. Self-named geriatric delinquent. She said, I am self-proclaimed. I identify as.
I'm just saying that she's clearly been in some sort of road rage incident. All right?
Or she just should not really be able to hold a driver's license. Like, my grandma's car ended up like that, where it's just like there are all these mysterious things, and it was like,
yeah, get off the road. Yeah.
Or someone didn't move her trolley when someone was asked, and they just left the trolley by her car, or no one would help her.
She does not leave her trolley anywhere near her car. She leaves that for other people to deal with, all right?
Maybe there was another person who put a revenge trolley next to that panel. Victoria, have you done that?
No.
What did you do? What did you do to her?
I didn't do anything. I did take a photo of her as she sped away from me.
No.
And I was like, there's a panel missing from the back of that car. She is on the freaking lam. She is causing trouble all over Adelaide.
Did you get a recho?
Yeah, I got a recho. And a reporter. And then, like, on the flight over, I copped the dirtiest look I have ever seen from an older lady. It was a great flight, had an incredible hostie, they may not like being called that, a flight attendant called Matthew Egan on Qantas, and I think he deserves a shout-out. He was incredible.
Oh, Comet's giving him a shout-out.
Sorry, Comet, just sorry about this. Comet's not really enjoying this group situation, so just.
He's got a few attachment issues.
He's got uncouth envy.
Anyway, he was amazing, and he's talking to everyone. He's going, girls trip. And so it's like these older ladies. Anyway, and I smile up at them, and this woman, you know when you see her eyes flipped and she started doing this thing with her tongue and breathing out really kind of in a measured way going,
oh, venom eye.
The tongue was sort of like The tongue was sort of like a snake's tongue, but just inside her mouth, I could see it moving, and I was like, she has flights of rage. You know, like she flips on people. I could see it. I smiled at her and she was like, I don't like the look of you, and why are you sitting in that seat? That's where I should be. Get out.
Did she think that you were trying to take over her girls' trip? Is that what she
just did not like the cut of my jib. And I just think that this is how it goes for me. Boomers have taken instant dislike to me. It's not my fault.
I have to say.
They're jealous. They're jealous.
I have to say.
Tell me what you have to say.
Or ask, is this the first time this has ever happened to you, Victoria? Because I think there might be.
Self-fulfilling prophecies.
Well, all I'm saying is, you know, you've got some very definite opinions. It wouldn't surprise me if there are a few.
Rubbing people up the wrong way, you reckon?
Okay. Yeah. I have actually once in my previous career as a journalist set a pack of people who were members of a website called Starts at 60 on me. They found me on Facebook. They're like, let's get her, because I wrote a column about boomers being maybe not the greatest generation.
Oh, no.
So this is like a long-running campaign.
It's long-standing, all right?
So this has been going.
She hasn't been fired, historically speaking.
Oh, we're talking like a decade ago.
Maybe not that long.
Well, because people have really started shitting on boomers like in the last couple of years. But are you trying to say that you're like a pioneer?
I was a vanguard.
What is your major beef?
Okay, so I wrote it was in.
Sorry, everyone. I'm just going to hold him.
Comet, shush. I think Comet agrees with you.
Although
Comet may be a boomer himself, let's be honest.
So I wrote a light-hearted column in response to a question, because I was an agony aunt at the time, about someone who's saying, my parents are saying something along the lines of, we're spending the inheritance, see you later, right? Yeah. And I was like, that's just kind of like a rude thing to say. It doesn't matter whether you're going to inherit money or not, but that kind of up yours,
the money's you're on your own.
Of thing is maybe not the best way to kind of go about things when they have enjoyed incredible privilege, right? And then Starts at 60 picked up the column, misrepresented it in a few ways, did a write through, you know, typical kind of clickbait rewrite. And then we both ended up on Channel 7 having a debate on Sunrise. Oh, anyway, they were lovely. They sort of agreed with me. It starts at 60. She kind of came in over the top and said a few things and they cut her off and I was like, yeah, thank you. But the Starts at 60 sort of Facebook group, they sort of set the pack up on me and they were saying things like, she's very ugly. And I was like, that's the best I've ever looked, guys. Like, it doesn't get any better, that picture. Yeah, and they were like, let's find her address. They were basically threatening to dox me, and I was like, wow, these grey nomads have a lot of spare time and clearly are prepared to use it with their internet sleuthing skills. They found out which school I went to. There was a whole thread of comments about me.
I have a hypothesis here. The woman on the plane started – the Starts at 60 website.
The pack.
So she actually knows who you are. Yeah. It's not just that you just had a vibe. She's actually like, oh, that's that bitch. That's who flagged me off on Channel 7.
Okay, so listen, my embarrassing history as a so-called journalist, probably we need to just draw a polite veil over that. But what I want to know is, Caroline.
Oh, dear.
Have you had any?
Have I made enemies?
Have you had any encounters, particularly back when you were on network television, with people who either took too much of a shine to you or not enough of a shine?
Well, there was a story about when I first got on the show and.
Which show?
On Blue Heelers. And I was very young and impressionable and I thought I was fabulous. And
What's Blue Heelers?
Show in which I played a sergeant, even though I was only 24.
Tess Gallagher?
Sergeant Tess Gallagher in a mythical country police station at Mount Thomas. And my beloved predecessor, Maggie, the character's name was Maggie Doyle, had died and I came in as
Australia's sweetheart, Lisa McKeown.
That's right.
Australia's lovely sweetheart. Lady. But you replaced her and maybe people weren't happy about that.
They weren't.
It was
tough gig.
But I didn't know. I didn't really understand the place that television had in people's lives.
Because you were too busy doing red leather, yellow leather.
That's right.
So Caroline, it was very impressive. I remember she finished NIDA. Doing drama school for 3 years where she was, you know, I don't know what.
No, she is one of this confederacy.
Yeah.
Saying things like that.
That kind of shit. And then she just got this gig straight away and it was really incredible.
Yeah, massively impressive.
But let's just, had you ever watched Blue Heelers before being on the show?
No, well, I mean, I didn't have a TV. I didn't have a TV.
So you signed up sight unseen.
I couldn't afford it. And so I was so excited to have any job. And I remember my agent, you know, back in the day where people had cigarettes, we went out into the, you know, balcony and had cigarettes. She said, you sure you want to do this? You're replacing Lisa McCune. I was like, yeah, no, it's all right. If she wants to leave the show, that's cool. I don't mind.
Were you just like, who's Lisa?
A little bit, yeah. And I didn't know. Look, I didn't know shit.
I think she'd won a gold logie.
She had won several gold logies by that point. And so I was ashamed to say I had no idea what I was doing. And then I was on the show and then it went to air. So I think I shot a few weeks in this blissful period where I was just doing acting and having fun and, you know, very nervous and being a bit silly and pouring lots of coffees down my front during takes because I was shaking so much. And then I went to the local IGA and I wanted to do some shopping and then I felt this smash in the back of my head and I turned around and there was a lady looked a little bit like you, Comet. I mean, not, but, you know, I wanted to befriend her and she said, you killed Maggie Doyle, and she had a pack of frozen peas in her hand that she'd smashed in my head and I didn't know what to do. And I
what
sort
did
of,
you say?
Well, I sort of laughed a little bit and I went, well, it's not really, I mean, thanks for watching the show, but, and I tried to sort of, you know, that's a character and I'm just playing a character.
You broke the fourth wall to her face.
I did, and she was, and I just saw her face just fall. She was quite excited that she'd recognised me and maybe given me a bit of a whack. But she was very disappointed that her, Australia's Sweetheart, her favourite, was taken off the show and that I'd killed her, but my character hadn't even killed her.
That's so what I was about to say. Had your character even killed her? No.
No, so she got six shots to the body in a railway yard. I wasn't there.
So, and neither was Tess Gallagher. But,
no.
But you were saying to her, it's not real.
Real.
But you could have just said to her, no, I didn't kill her. That was those guys in the railway yard. Yeah,
we're going
to
get them for
gonna
you. Don't
get
you worry.
Keep watching. Keep watching.
Keep watching.
We're going to get them.
Where were you? I needed a publicist. I needed some help from you guys. I really did.
You know, you just said you didn't understand the role that TV played in people's lives. Like, she's an example of that, right?
Yeah.
So how would you describe that? Because it's different now. There was a lot more intimacy maybe, though. In your living room, how many times was Healers on a week? Twice?
Twice a week. I'd go over to my parents' place. They'd turn it on a Wednesday night. I'd go over and have dinner and I'd wonder why the table was set sort of in this U shape, and that's because they'd turn the TV on. And then within 5 minutes of the show going on, I'd turn around and I'd be like, oh, this bit's quite good. This guy's coming in. I'd turn around. My parents were all asleep.
So that actually.
That's not emblematic of the role it plays. Or was it a sleep aid for the older generation?
And then I'd realise they were all asleep, so I'd switch it over to Sea Change. Boom, they'd be awake. Like, oh, I love that Diver Dan. And they'd be on to it. So I was very disappointed by my parents. But then I went on Bert Newton's show a little while later and I sat down. And
R.I.P.
I was like, yeah, R.I.P. Where's Bert? Where is he? You know, it had all gone live. Bang, in the back of my head, frozen peas. He had them in his hand. He hit me. He'd heard the story. He said, I heard you like them on the back of your head. And I was like,
did that story ricochet around the acting community?
Ricocheted around my
like bag of peas.
Yeah.
Lisa McCune heard that story, didn't she, well?
She thought it was very funny. She was lovely and she was very, very kind and encouraging to me. But I had no idea what I was doing and I think that they were a little bit – people didn't like my character because I was too direct and I'd come in to poor old Martin Sachs and, you know, say, PJ, I want that in writing. And I was 24. Even female cops, sergeants would say, you're making my life hell because you're such a bossy little And I think it was a thing, you know, like where you had to be kind of sweet. I think that's all changed quite a lot now.
You were a girl boss before your time.
No, I was.
Bunsen, has there ever been a time when you've sort of had unsolicited negative feedback?
That's a question that I asked you once, I believe.
That was about extreme negative feedback about an outfit. But this is more sort of general to do with perhaps work.
This is going to get a little meta.
Is it? Okay.
So one of the biggest times that I recall, I might actually tear up.
Aww.
Because one of the biggest times I recall getting unsolicited feedback, well, it was definitely.
She's pointing your finger over
it
here.
It was passed on secondhand. And it was definitely from you.
No.
But from Caroline.
Yeah, from Caroline and perhaps a couple of other people.
Was it about farts? Oh, no, I know what this is about.
Okay, so it was about And the thing is, I have to say, it was an extremely unpleasant experience. But But I did learn from it.
Maybe was it an act of kindness in the end?
No.
Okay.
I've put the silver lining in there. That came from me.
All right. Okay, let's set the scene because I think I know this story, but I want to hear it from you.
Take us back. Let's take us back.
It's we're in Brunswick in Melbourne, and it might be 2001. Mm-hmm. And I've been feeling like some of my really close friends have been a bit strange with me recently, and I'm not really sure why. And I happened to mention this to another friend, and this friend said, yeah, well, actually, I was at the pub with them last night and they were bitching about you.
Oh.
That was you, Caroline.
Oh.
You were bitching about me.
Oh, was I in the pub bitching? Or did I tell you about the bitching?
No, you were in the pub bitching.
Oh, God.
And no, but what you were saying with
Just wait.
What you were saying with a couple of other friends was, oh, that Bunsen, you know, she's fun. But, gee, she's cheap. She is such a scab. She never buys a round for everybody. She never pays you back. She's that's Comet.
I deserve it. Okay, come on.
He really doesn't like Caroline. Caroline's sitting right next to me. I'm just gonna pop.
Yeah.
She never. You know, she's cheapskate, and she doesn't kind of like. She's really ungenerous, and she just expects that we're all gonna pay for it.
And let's put it in context. We were all students and stuff at the time.
Poor as shit. Yeah.
But the thing was that I, of course, found this very upset. It's all awful feeling like you've got other people, you know, talking about you, particularly when it's unsolicited. But the thing was that after some, you know, like I say, Victoria, I do the work. After I'd done the work and thought about it, I realised they actually had a point. I never offered to pay. I don't know what it was. It just kind of, it was like, something had to be pointed out to me to go, oh, that's actually etiquette. Whereas I was just kind of like,
getting away with it.
No, it wasn't even getting away with it. It was just like, how great, they're buying me a drink. Wasn't that nice? I just didn't occur anyway. So, yeah that was probably, I'm sure that there have been many, many other times when I have
You're
received.
Very generous now, incredibly generous.
Well, perhaps, actually you do owe me $624 bucks.
Do I?
No. Oh.
She's keeping a ledger.
She could have actually held that and I would have gone, oh, I think I probably do.
No, you don't. But I think it was actually very helpful in the end because it was just like about growing up. Like I was just like privileged loser. Like,
can I ask a question? Because I actually think maybe I heard about that story in a different way because I wasn't around. I think I'd maybe not been living in Melbourne for a while at that
because
point.
In Melbourne, there are a lot of people giving unsolicited feedback. Yeah, she'd left. She'd left by that time.
You know what I called that experience of living in Melbourne because we were all up each other's clackers? The committee. There was always a committee who had an opinion on what you were doing. Yeah, they were judging your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your job, your career trajectory.
Well, some of them, Caroline, were sleeping with other people's boyfriends.
Well, it was a boyfriend anyway. Other than a pact between friends.
My understanding of that was that it happened as an interfriendship, not behind your back as a bitching thing, but that it happened at a dinner and someone sort of said,
yeah, it's coming back to me now.
You know, you can't leave without paying the bill. And it was more of an interfriendship.
Oh, no, that could have been about the fact that I used to try and encourage other people to do runners and they weren't really into that.
So there was a bit of that going on too. And we were all very excited at any possible opportunity to get a free drink. I mean, let's face it, every single event we went to, we're like, quick, we can go, we can get free beer. You know, like that was always a thing. So I can totally understand. And no one has ever, I mean, you're learning a lot of lessons. Like you've only just got a tiny bit of money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like who even knew, like you pay for other people and they pay for you or any of that stuff.
I think, well, everyone else seemed to know that.
Yeah.
No, I knew when I got to drama school. That's for sure.
Let's just say that you have learnt from direct feedback and actually you may not have thought it was a kindness. It maybe wasn't expressed as a kindness, but you actually experienced it in a way where if that had gone on unchecked, you could have fallen out with people and had no idea why.
Well, exactly. And that's
in another
why,
friendship group, actually, people wouldn't have said anything.
Yeah. But that's why. So my friend who was the one who said, yes, I was at the pub. Actually, that friend was my girlfriend at the time. So I do not really understand why you were bitching about me in front of my. Yeah, I mean, she was quite clear.
So was it like an intervention, maybe one step removed?
I don't know. Maybe you were trying to tell her so that she could tell me. Anyway, the point is, I experienced it as unsolicited feedback, and it was really upsetting. Mm. But by the same token, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, I have that. I am.
You did the work.
And now you've acted on it, and you're one of the most generous friends that we have.
Yeah.
Oh, very... That's because I just am desperate to be liked, and I realised I have to pay people to hang out with me.
No.
I have not learnt from my unsolicited advice. And actually what's happened to me is I've just developed an extremely thick heart. I don't give a fuck about any comments or feedback people have for me. I'm like, fuck you, I don't give a shit. You're an arsehole anyway. It's like if you go into the comments of any article or into a Facebook group, it's toxic as shit. What are you going to learn there?
Why do you think I'm hiding behind a cloak of anonymity?
Okay, let's maybe move on to a slightly different topic. Let it out, Comet. Let it out. Okay, so we had a little bit of solicited feedback or unsolicited, just feedback. Let's just say feedback.
From the goof?
From Cooth, actually from my sister from last week's episode.
We solicit all feedback from the Cooth is welcome. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Unknown Cooth. Yeah. Known Cooth.
Cooth, uncouth, we're here for
what it. What is it? Yes. Cooth, podcast it.
No. Hey, zip it.
I don't know how to do that shit.
Send us your feedback, your Cooth uncouth dilemmas to souncouthpod, or one word or lowercase, at gmail.com. Or you can hit us on the DMs. So uncouth podcast.
That sounds very painful.
Anyway, picked up a little non sequitur, a little something that sort of slipped into the pod that, you know, was the product of an off-air chat about me having worked at a gentleman's club. Mm-hmm. And, Caroline, I'd like you to use your professional skills
to give it a sonorous rendition.
Some life. This came from my sister.
You need to do a little bit of me.
Can I just ask, Victoria, did I hear you correctly? Did you say you worked in a gentleman's club? You're concerned, sister. I liked it. Good work, she's written.
I'll take that too. She's been desperate for a mention on the pod, so she'll be delighted. But I've often told her that she's fundamentally too uninteresting to make it in. So
she's too couth. She's very couth.
This is the one time we've relented. So, yeah, she heard that. And had never heard that before about my career. So I just wanted to explain a little bit about that job, which was that it was a gentleman's club in the sense that, I think I said this last week, they didn't allow women to be members.
So what were you doing there?
That was an elite club.
An elitist sort of posh club in Mayfair.
Like your Garrick Club, your, I don't know, Soho Club or whatever they're called.
That's right. And the reason we were talking about it is because my least favourite person in the world, Prince Andrew, came up in a conversation and I'd taken photos of him and I wanted to go back and look at those photos to see whether or not there were any sweat patches there.
Did you take photos of him at the club?
Can we just back up? Firstly, how and why did you get a job at the gentleman's club and what were your duties?
And what were you paid?
And did you have to give any sexual favours?
No, it wasn't that kind of gentleman's club.
I just can't help it. It's so cheap. I can't help it.
Listen, let's not join the dots incorrectly here. Yes, I've done pole dancing classes. Yes, I worked at a gentleman's club. The two things are not connected in any way.
Did you ever have pound notes in your garter?
No.
I do remember once when you came to my house, she had a splinter in her thigh from doing some pole dancing on
a wooden pole.
A tree.
Anyway, irrelevant. Irrelevant. All right.
That's why you like koalas. You've been sending me pictures of koalas.
Okay, let her get it out.
No, so I was a communications person.
Oh, what did you have to communicate?
I cannot remember, but I remember thinking, if this is all it is, as in life.
Is that all it is?
Yeah. I may as well fucking end it now. Like, this is some bullshit. It was so boring. That's the place where they told me off for having curly hair.
Oh, my.
To be honest, like, it wasn't the worst job I've ever had, actually. And I have had many, many jobs, all kinds of jobs. I've been an extra. I've done debt collection. So many jobs that I've often thought that I should write something called Shit Jobs the Musical.
Oh, I would love that.
What I want to know is, what is your worst job, Bunsen? What's the worst job you've ever had?
Oh, well, okay, well, I can answer this, but I do want to say that we will get back to the prince. Or the former prince, I don't know what he is.
Oh, there's no real story there. He was a guest at the club one night. I took it upon myself to take photos of him.
She's a communications manager.
I had those photos somewhere. I should go back and have a look at them and maybe see if I can tender them as
how
evidence.
How sweaty he is.
Because,
is some sort of
because in his famous BBC interview, he said that he couldn't possibly have been at a certain place.
People know.
Said he was physiologically unable to sweat. So Victoria's going to go back and look in her old photo album to see if she took any photos of sweaty royal
checks and bits.
Okay.
Anyway, all I'm saying is that that was a bunch of bullshit about the prince.
So worst job, though. We've talked quite a bit about a job in a souvenir warehouse that I had. But probably my worst kind of job stretch was when I was doing an internship in New York, and internships are just stupid because you don't get paid for them. But then in order to get a visa, you can't have any other job.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I was trying to get under the table work, meaning off the books work. And I was like, well, there are a lot of restaurants in New York. I'm just going to go and try and get a job at a restaurant. Man, I, as we've established, I'm not very good at sales or really smiling if I don't mean it. And that means that really just I could not get past a trial in a restaurant because they would give me the job of being the hostess, which is the person who takes people's coats and just leads them to their table. That is all I had to do.
Oh, I love that.
All I had to do. I wasn't even allowed to ask anybody
to take
anyone's order. I wasn't even trusted to do that. But I couldn't do that whole American, hey, have a great day.
Like, how's everything?
You couldn't do the tits and teeth of it.
I just couldn't do it. And so then I ended up in this situation where the only thing that I could do was something where I didn't have to sell anything. I had to give something away for free. And that was not my body, I'm just saying. The thing that I had to give away, I don't know why that.
Not sure why we went there.
Yeah,
but anyway.
The thing I was supposed to give fruit juice away for free in ridiculous Poncy supermarkets, like in Connecticut or whatever. Mm. And so I'd have to get out there with this kind of crate of apple juice.
You still have to be pretty charming, don't you?
Set up this kind of like cardboard sort of stand to give out free samples. And it was Fuji apple juice. And these Americans would come up to me and they'd be like, oh my God, I was just in Fuji. And then these children would kind of like seize upon the cardboard stand and spill the apple juice all over me. And I basically, I don't know if I was fired or if they just never called me back, but I did this for a few months. And then there was one day in Soho where this guy came up and was like, you know, you would sell so much more juice if you just smiled a little more. No. Oh, and I said, I don't need to sell it. It's free. I'm not smiling. And that was it.
Which could have gone, it sells itself. It's so great.
Yeah, well, like you and the frozen peas, there was bigger things going on. Anyway, so that would be probably, that was a pretty low moment for me, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a bit like my job in the pub where I was 17 working in the pub, being paid £2.50 an hour.
In the UK.
In the UK, yeah. Del and Lisa, who were the governors, went and passed out upstairs when she found out she was pregnant and he had drunk a lot of baby shams. And then the Manchester United and Manchester City game happened and some guy jumped on the table and started throwing nunchuckers around. And I realised very quickly that I was the only person.
Do you know what you needed? Do you know what you should have got? Frozen peas.
Frozen peas. I didn't know my future would hold such opportunity. But I was actually, yeah, that was terrifying. And that was, and pretty much the problem was that every time I'd get my £2.50 or, you know, maybe I'd even have £5 by the end of the night, you know. And then I'd just spend it. I just put it back in the till because I'd get a snake button black and I'd just drink it all. So it was really.
That's a zero-sum game. Would you have been finishing other people's half empties?
I'm sure I did that.
No, but I mean, we've all seen me
scab a cigarette.
Listen,
you're an inspiration. I've got a lot to learn from you.
Around the time when this unsolicited feedback came, I had also been thrown out of a few local pubs for bumming too many cigarettes. Remember that?
That's right. I remember that.
I remember.
And you used to say, can you go and ask for a cigarette? I'd be like, why? Because I'm not allowed to bum them anymore.
You're on a list.
Yeah, anyway.
You're on a wall of shame.
Listen, I think it's becoming clearer and clearer the reason for my anonymity and my hidden identity.
Well, we've all got life lessons.
Heaps, so. Mate. All right. Well, we are almost at the end. It's time for a So Uncouth of the Week. And it is about a man called Jason Lau, who took the women's only lounge at Mona to a tribunal and had it fucking shut down.
Yeah.
And this week I'm renaming So Uncouth to Get a Fucking Grip. Because
is this in Tasmania?
Yes. Yeah. What a fucking loser.
But it was also because the whole point of the art piece was that men or privileged men may feel a sense of exclusion that women had felt for a very, very long time. Oh. But under the law, like who takes a piece of art to the law? Anyway, that's a bigger conversation. But
you could pretty much just take all of Mona to the law, I mean, wouldn't you? Because isn't that what Mona's about? Breaking against the
cultural norms,
exactly.
Challenging society.
Thank you.
That's actually what we are about.
Yeah. Wish if you won live from Mona one day, maybe just on the ferry.
Well, you know what I want him to know?
What? Is this a shout out to Jason?
He's excluded from this podcast.
Oh,
take it to a tribunal, mate. And on that note, cop yous later, Jason Lau.
Cop yous later.
Cop yous.